It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby!
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Okay, let's keep it going here. Final hour of the week on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio. Hope everybody has a really good weekend. Some people getting back from vacation, some people going on vacation. I'll be back on Monday here and then heading out of town for 4th of July and a little bit after that. And wanted to lead this hour off as we continue on with our series about Raider draft picks and the most valuable, the most unique, the greatest. We still haven't come up with a title of this show, and I tried it out hour one. We think it's the most valuable draft picks in Raider history. And the most accomplished is a word that we threw around when I was in the building yesterday. And again, the value of the draft pick, where the player was drafted, who he became, how to be drafted by the Raiders initially, and then what is his legacy. So I wanted to leave us with the last hour of the week with a player who's no longer with us, but I had a chance to meet and get to know before he passed away. And I think it's the perfect example of what we're trying to do this summer as I kick off this hour with fullback Marv Hubbard. Everybody raise your hand and beep your horn. If you know who Marv Hubbard is, you should. If you're a Raider fan and you don't know, that's why we're doing this. We're trying to help people out. If you don't know who Marv Hubbard is, our job is to educate you on this. The great number 44, the fullback of the Oakland Raiders, born in New York, Salamanca, New York, in 1946, May 7th, and died May 4th, 2015, at the age of only 68 in Walnut Creek. A guy I considered a friend, Marv Hubbard, who won a Super Bowl with the Raiders, who was on the Super Bowl 11 team. And Marv was drafted by the Raiders, ready for this? In 1968, the AFL, in the 11th round, the 277th overall pick. And you ask anybody to this day, he's considered one of the toughest football players to ever play the game. He was selected in the common draft. Remember, the AFL and the NFL. And he was cut by both the Raiders and the Broncos in the preseason. He joined the Hartford Knights of the Atlantic Coast Football League. Did you ever hear of the ACFL? Where he led the league in rushing. He rejoined Oakland and played in the AFL's final season before the merger with the NFL. Now, he had a lot of injuries in his career. He missed part of the 1975 season as well as the entire 1976 season, which the team won Super Bowl XI. He played his final season in the NFL with the Detroit Lions. He was a three-time All-Pro for the Raiders. Helped lead the team to four consecutive AFC West titles. That was 72 to 75. Three consecutive AFC championship games. Wow. 73 to 75. Hubbard is ranked third in NFL history for highest yards per carry. Very important here. 4.82 yards per carry for a fullback, behind only Hall of Fame fullbacks Jim Brown and Joe Perry. And is tied for 13th overall in highest yards per carry in NFL history. So his story is truly amazing. He grew up in Red House, New York, and, you know, lived a quiet life as a kid. And when I met Marv, he liked to party. He liked to throw down beer, and he was a good guy. He was a life of the party. At Ricky's, I did a big remote in Burlingame. I wish someone could tell me the name of the bar. But it was a sports bar, and I did a remote for the Ticket 1050, and Marv showed up. And he was there with me, came on the show, and he drank everybody in the bar, beer for beer. He attended Colgate University. Okay, and we're going to get to another Raider great draft pick who you might know the clue from Colgate. And he lettered 3 years, leading the team in rushing in 1965-66. And at the time, it was the second highest total in Colgate history. He ended his career as the school's second leading rusher with 1,887 yards and 22 touchdowns. In 1995, Hubbard was inducted into the Colgate University Athletic Hall of Fame, Hall of Honor, as they call it. But I really think it was his relationship with Al Davis and the ability for him to run with the style. He was very quick for his size, powerfully built. All the Raider alumni talk about the size of his hands and how big he was. He was a fan favorite in the Madden era. In an interview with the Contra Costa Times, John Madden said this. Listen to this. Marv Hubbard was one of the toughest players we ever had. There are people that will have contact and people who won't have contact, but only a few that will have it and really enjoy it. Marv was one of those guys who truly enjoyed the collision. He would look for it. Again, the 4.82 yards per carry is what I want you to remember. That was really big. He was a standout for the Raiders from 71 to 74, part of 75. Gave Oakland's air attack balance with the running game. He led the Raiders in rushing four straight seasons. Think of the greatest era of the Raiders is the 70s. He led the team in rushing from 71 to 74 and averaged a total of 1,000 total yards from scrimmage in each. He gained 1,100 yards rushing during the 72 season, becoming the Raiders' then all-time single-season rushing leader. He rushed for a total of 4,544 yards, 3,755 of which came during his four full-time years with the Raiders, and he was named to the NFL's AFC Pro Bowl team three times, 71, 72, and 73. And with all due respect to the Pro Bowlers of today, it was much bigger then. Much bigger then. He scored 24 touchdowns, 23 rushing, one in the passing game during his career. And again, he was just so popular. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I'm looking at it right here. December 17th, 1973, after the Raiders beat the Chiefs. And he was just a larger-than-life character, man. Just a great guy. He had so many injuries. The shoulder injuries from the beating that he gave out and he took. He spent all of the 76 season on injured reserve, but was a part of that Super Bowl team. He received the ring for being a team member of the 1976 Raiders in Super Bowl XI. And I just love the guy. And that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to talk about these players and give them a summer all to themselves. So we met yesterday, and I said, I looked at the list. We have 54 players that we're gonna not going to get to all of them. I think we'll get to over 40 or so. We're going to do it now over 8 to 10 minutes, however long I'm rambling here. But this is one of the players I knew. And I didn't know him well, but I knew him good enough. And when I started my career with the Raiders in 1998, he was around a lot. And I got a chance to know Marv Hubbard. And any Raider alumni who played, and some of the guys that I'm going to be talking about here as the all-time greatest draft picks, I'm not going to be able to interview because they passed on, and Marv is one of them. But he deserves consideration here because he's the perfect example of why I'm doing this. He was taken in the 11th round, 277th overall, and he's widely considered an all-time Raider great. So that's what we're doing here. Marv Hubbard, welcome to our summer series, as he's the fullback on the list here, and there's been many great fullbacks and guys on the ground in Raider history, but this is one of the special guys, really special guy, and I'm happy we're able to kick off this hour. And I'm hoping you're enjoying this because Marv was really special, and Marv had this grit to him and toughness. And did he have problems off the field? Yeah. Was he a guy that was a carouser, a rebel rouser, as you'd like to say? I mean, the stories that I've heard over the years are pretty interesting. He was a country musician and songwriter for a brief period of time. He released a single, Fullbacks Ain't Supposed to Cry, in 1978, which I did some homework on here. He loved golf, played at all the Raider golf charities, and they were just great guys overall. And I just think that this was an interesting person that had some problems off the field at the end of his life. And, you know, when he died in 2015, just 3 days shy of his 69th birthday, he had complications of prostate cancer. Good opportunity to remind everybody, get tested for prostate cancer. Make sure. And he was inducted into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame in 2018. So I'm happy we're able to do this. That is Marv Hubbard, one of the all-time great Raiders. I'm not ranking him. He's not in my top 10. My top 10 will be probably in 3 weeks to a month from now. But Marv is in a lot of people's top of Raider greats. Marv Hubbard comes in today as we kick off the most valuable, the most accomplished, the most impactful. That's the word we're using, impactful Raider draft picks of all time. An 11th round pick, I hope you get what we're doing here. I asked Bobby to do this today. I'm working from home, and I wanted to... Vinny Monsignor joined me early in the week. He was spectacular. And my son's doing something with that interview because I told him, I go, this is really good. Vinny was filling in a lot this week for Q, and I wanted you to hear this portion of our conversation as Vinny was in studio with me, and we were breaking down the Raiders, talking about some of his columns. Vinny Monsignor, along with me earlier this week. Vinny Monsignor is triple dipping today. He did morning drive. He's doing evening drive in for Q, and he's jumping on with me. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. You heard Alex Kappa there. I wanted to talk about the running game with you for about 10 minutes and what you think the interior competition is going to be like for the starting guards. Thinking JPJ has center locked up and Colton Miller and DJ Glaze. Yep. How important is it to get that right to establish the run?
Yeah, there's no question about it. It starts up front. Everybody will tell you that, and including Chip Kelly and Brendan Carroll, the offensive line coach, and Pete Carroll, the head coach. And, you know, when you talk about, like you said, DJ Glaze, I think, is a staple over at right tackle, Colton Miller. That goes without saying. I think the Raiders have a Pro Bowl caliber center in the future, maybe even this year, in Jackson Powers Johnson. So you've got 3/5 of your offensive linemen, offensive line is really set in stone. And I feel like when you think about the investment that they've made, second round pick in JPJ, a third round pick in DJ Glaze, a first round pick in Colton Miller, a third round pick in Dylan Parham, who looks like he's going to be the starting left guard. The Raiders have invested in their offensive line with premium draft picks. And I think you're starting to see that kind of come to fruition, especially with the younger guys that are going into their second year. Alex Kappa, who we just heard from, likely the starter at right guard. That's his position. So if that is the case, I think it's you know, the Raiders will march into the future or this season with that. But I keep an eye on Thayer Munford. He was the consistent second team left guard during OTAs and minicamp. And when Dylan did not practice on the last day of minicamp, it was Thayer who was the starter. That's the first time we've really seen him playing that position. Yeah. He's played guard in college. He did that at Ohio State. He's been primarily a right tackle here for the Raiders. But when you look at the how imposing the left side of that offensive line looked with Colton Miller, 6'8", Thayer Munford at 6'6", well over 300 pounds, it was a pretty intimidating looking left side of the offensive line. I don't know what that foretells for camp, but keep an eye on Thayer Munford and left guard.
Would it be fair for me to say that there's going to be a point in the preseason between the second and third preseason game that not some player getting in the doghouse, but Pete Carroll looking at his son saying, he's outperforming the other guy, we got to give him another look in this third preseason game or second one, because if you're buying in, which I am and you are, to this competition, Pete, you could lose your job on the offensive line if you don't have a great camp.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's the edict is clear. Compete. Push this as far as you can. And that goes without saying at every position. The Raiders did invest a couple more draft picks in the offensive line with Caleb Rogers and Charles Grant. And they're going to be given every opportunity to play as soon as they possibly can and show that they are the better person. And so this is a open competition, even though it feels solidified. But if somebody else is playing better than someone else, then Pete Carroll has never showed any hesitation to make the move.
Vinny Monsignor joins us. So growing up as a kid and my dad teaching me to read the box score, I've always been a numbers guy when it comes to sports, not in school and not in life, but in sports. And I'm trying to do the math with the amount of targets that are going to go. That would be rushing attempts by Ashton Jeanty and Raheem Mostert and Brock Bowers' targets. So I'm looking at that number saying, I got to think minimum for Ashton's 15, maximum's 21, 22. Brock's a 12-target guy. But I'm looking at Mostert, fresh, not injured, just a beast of an athlete, and I can't see him getting 2 or 3, but I can't see him getting 7 or 8. When you're putting your numbers together, speculating on this, take us behind the scenes on what you think.
Yeah, I feel like, at least my projections, and I feel, talking to some people, that this feels in line with what could happen. My bet would be that it might go over it, but as of right now, I'm looking at, for an Ashton Gentry, 17 carries per game. I have him for at 200. That puts him at 289 for the season, which is a lot of carries.
That is a lot.
Yeah. A lot of carries. It's 17 carries per game. You know, I'm looking at maybe 4.5 yards per carry, 4.6 yards per carry. That gets him over 1,300 yards rushing. So that's how I would see it. I don't think that they invested the sixth pick overall in a just a incredibly talented player like Ashton Gentry, with the idea of any sort of a platoon, any sort of easing his way into this. It's going to be full bore ahead from day one. They're going to try to get him the ball as many ways as possible, including the pass game. I've got him at about 55 targets, I think it was, over 40 catches, close to 50 catches, you know, 500 some odd yards in the
pass
game.
Yeah.
He's capable of doing it, and we saw, you know, we saw the screen passes that they were throwing to him. We saw him throw it to him down the field as well. Again, he's a weapon, an ultimate weapon, kind of like Brock Bowers. And what do you do with weapons, especially if you're Chip Kelly and you understand how mismatches work and how imperative it is to tap into your difference makers? You get them the ball. And so I would expect that he's going to get the ball, Ashton Gentry, a lot this year.
I haven't even asked you this yet because it just came to me. How many rushing attempts in a game could Geno get where he actually sees an open space before a play develops and takes off for a first down? Do you think that's not going to happen, that's part of his past, or because of his athletic ability now and his confidence that he could really do that and run for two or three first downs in a game?
Yeah, no, I you're talking about designed plays for him, RPOs.
Yeah, not only in let me clarify that. An RPO, maybe one or two, but just the ability to look and spread everybody out on third and four and go, oh my God, I see this wide open. I'm just going to run off the right side and dive forward and pick up a first down.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I actually think that there's going to be some RPOs as well for him. At least with the action that we saw during minicamp and OTAs, there's definitely that element that's involved. And as Pete Carroll, I might have been at the combine or somewhere along the line, whenever it was after they traded for Geno Smith, might have been the year's meetings. And he talked about the fact that Geno didn't play for a long time. There were multiple years that went by without him on the field.
Yeah.
And when you think about that in a positive sense, it means that his body is not your typical 35-year-old quarterback, NFL quarterback body that's been playing since he was 21 years old to now 35 years old. There was a long lapse where he didn't really play, so that gives him fresh legs, a fresh body. And I think Pete Carroll felt like he was alluding to the fact that he's got some juice left in those legs. Might as well utilize that juice.
Thornton, if you look at what he's able to do in the red zone with his height, and if they go three or four wide there, would Trey Tucker most likely be on the bench? Because Thornton's going to be there as a high-point catch guy that could get you out of trouble there. And I say the same thing about Michael Mayer. Brock's going to be in all the time, every time, first and goal or inside the 20. And what does that do with Michael Mayer, keeping him in there to block or run routes?
Yeah, I think they're going to utilize Michael Mayer in the pass game. I'm not going to write off Trey Tucker. He made a beautiful catch on a back shoulder throw that only, I mean, it was as perfect a throw as you could possibly imagine. Probably the best throw that I've seen on that practice field in a long, long time.
Wow,
let's just say that. And Trey made a fantastic play to you know, make sure that it was his body was between the defender and the ball, made a catch for a touchdown from Geno Smith. I still think that, I mean, he is coming off a 47 catch season, and that was with subpar quarterback play. So I still think that there's something left out there for Trey Tucker. But you mentioned Dante Thornton. I think that there's going to be an intentionality to get him on the field. He was getting first team reps during minicamp and OTAs. You don't read too much into things, but to me, you read into the fact that the Raiders liked what they saw, felt like he could be could play sooner rather than later, and there were situational periods where he was running with the first-team offense. I can't take that lightly.
So wrapping it up with the running game, Vinny Bonsignore is our guest in studio. Sincere McCormick, Zamir White, Dylan Lobby. Look, we got a great young running back who could have the upside. I won't say Barry Sanders, but I'll say it. He could have it.
Say it. It's true.
What does it do to those guys when it comes to special teams, just making the roster and making sure you got someone there who's got some pop if someone goes down and gets injured?
Yeah, for a guy like Dylan Lobby, special teams is going to be his bread and butter. That's what he has to do and has to excel at in order to make this team, quite honestly, and have a role on this team. And one thing that's working in his favor and some of the other players that might be battling for a roster spot is the fact that there's going to be a lot more kickoff returns this year.
Yeah.
Teams are not going to settle for just kick it out of the out of bounds and put the other team at the 35-yard line. They're not going to let that happen. So that means they're going to kick it and go try to run downfield as quickly as possible to knock it down before it gets to the 30 or 35-yard line, which means there's going to be plenty of opportunities for a guy like Dylan Lauby, a guy like Kyle Phillips, a guy like Tommy Mellott, maybe even Dante Thornton. We saw him taking some kickoffs during OTAs and minicamp as well. So there's going to be some opportunities. This is not how the kickoffs been the last couple of years, where it was just there were no kickoffs.
Right.
Yeah, quite honestly, there will be kickoffs this year, and so there's going to be players out there. When you start thinking about the fact that how many kickoffs there are in the course of a season, after, you know, either starting the first half or the second half, when the other team scores points, kick, you know, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, you're looking at a player potentially on a team getting 70 touches. That's a lot of touches, and you could do some things with those touches. And so there's going to be an opportunity for Dylan Lauby, but that's basically the opportunity.
I hope you're right about this, because there was a day in Costa Mesa that Eric Allen was up there, and we were calling the game for the preseason games, and we were both kind of nervous that we had to figure out the rule and understand it for the play-by-play. And we sat in the end zone and watched for a good hour, and we were so optimistic. This is going to change the sport. It was such a dud last year. You're in the press box. I'm there. You're waiting for score. You're waiting for something to happen, and you believe it's going to change that drastically from one season to another.
Well, you got to understand that they didn't go as far as the original intent last year, not this past, you know, owners meeting, is the past one, was to put it at the 35. But the owners and the rules committee felt like, we might be going a little bit too far with that. So let's just stick it at the 30. That made all the difference in the world, because eventually, once the data started coming in, teams realized that whether we kick it out of the end zone or we go down there and tackle it, they're basically keep getting the ball between the 26 and 30 yard line. So why even take any chance on kicking it and getting hurt or a busted play where it goes back for a touchdown? If they're going to be getting the ball anyway between the 25 and 30, might as well just give it to them at the 30. Yeah. This year, all statistics show that when you start a drive at the 35-yard line, your chances of scoring goes way up, whether it's a field goal or a kickoff or a touchdown. Teams are not going to just willingly give that up. They're going to say, we're going to kick it to you, and we're going to make sure you don't get to the 35-yard line.
Last one, when it comes to Christian Wilkins' photo in a boot that Deshaun Reed put out there, we're going to table that topic because we're going to wait for the Raiders to give us an update there. What other player, either health-wise or growth-wise, in these 6 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks with their playbook, that you think has a lot of pressure on them in a good way to come back and prove to Chip Kelly and Patrick Graham and Pete Carroll that they're good to go and they're fighting for a starting position?
Well, it's a guy by the name of Tyree Wilson.
There we go.
Yeah. And in Tyree's defense, he was playing well. You know, he was putting up numbers. You go look at the pressures that he created. He ended up, I think, with 5.5 sacks last year. Not where he wants to be, not where he should be. But as the season went on, there was a more well-rounded game, more times where he was getting to be a factor in the rush game, didn't necessarily get home, but was creating pressure. He needs to build off of that, and he knows that. The team knows that. I don't know if he's ever going to live up to the seventh pick overall in the draft, but he has a chance to be a good player for this team and a rotational defensive end that could get pressure on the quarterback. And as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with John Spytek as their assistant general manager, and obviously the Seattle Seahawks when Pete was there, and the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles have shown, pass rush is not just four guys or two guys or three guys. It's a slew of guys. Yeah. And if you can get a rotation going that's 7-8 deep and keep flooding the opponent with guys that could get to the quarterback, that's worth its price in gold, and Tyree Wilson can really enhance that by taking a big step forward this year.
Ari, why can't I have a co-host like this? And I'd let him host, and he'd let me host, and we'd come in. I mean, why can't I have this? Well, I have to do everything. If I had Vinny 3 days a week for like an hour,
you know
my, life
don't tempt me.
My life
don't
would open
me.
Up. My life would open up. Thanks for doing this,
thank
buddy.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate Vinny, and I hope you enjoyed that, too. And Vinny had a very busy week, and I appreciate the opportunities that Vinny has to sit in for me. Vinny is a valuable commodity and asset to this channel, no doubt about it. Vinny Bonsignore, give him a follow on X. And Vinny likes to talk about other sports too, as I was able to listen to a little bit of it this week with the NBA draft and the Lakers and some of the other topics that he was talking about. When we come back, my conversation with Jim Gray, the Hall of Excellence is open, and I'm going down there again. I'm going to be there, I believe, Sunday, because they want me to see something that I didn't see. So I'm going to go back again. It's at Fontainebleau. $30 for locals, $35 if you're out of market. It's Jim Gray and his wife, Fran, along with Tom Brady. I was invited to be a part of the VIP grand opening. And Jim checked in to tell us about the Hall of Excellence. And I'll get to that here in a little bit as we continue on. Remember, everybody, if you're looking for a beverage, no better place to have a beer and a bucket of Modelo's with me on Friday. I'm looking out at it. Backyard brick. I can see it through my studio. I'm soon going to put a bucket of Modelo's on ice. I got my Modelo bucket. I got my Modelo cans. I got my ice. Bucket of Modelo's Friday as we continue on the flagship. This is Raider Nation Radio. Thanks for coming back, everybody. JT from home today with my big boy dog next to me being very quiet, and a good weekend coming up. I'll be back next Monday, and then I'm going to be heading out on a 4th of July vacation back east, but we'll have you all covered here on Raider Nation Radio, and there's a lot to do here as it gets super hot, either if you're in a pool, if you're fortunate enough to have a pool, or you can do a staycation. I did a staycation last week for the first time at the Fontainebleau, and I was pretty blown away by it. I've been to the Fontainebleau a handful of times. But Jim Gray invited me to be a part of the promotion along with Howard Deneroff, as he's the director, and Jim and his wife Fran put together the Hall of Excellence with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's family was in town, and it was a spectacular party, a spectacular unveiling, and I recommend everybody head on out to the Fontainebleau. It's on the second floor, and as you'll see in this conversation, Jim told us they'll validate your parking, which everybody should in this town. How do you go to dinner? How do you go to a restaurant? How do you go to a bar in Vegas and sit in a restaurant and not get your parking validated? Jim mentioned that they'll validate your parking if you go to the Hall of Excellence, and I was really excited and proud that a longtime friend of the show, Jim Gray, called in earlier this week to talk about the Hall. I didn't know Jim Gray. We have Jim Gray on from the Hall of Excellence, one of the greatest events and parties I've ever been to, and the Hall of Excellence is going to change all of our lives. Jim, thanks a lot for calling in. How are you?
I'm great, JT. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm thrilled to have you on, and thank you so much, and thanks for inviting my wife and I to the kickoff and the Hall of Excellence event. Before we get to the party and the event afterwards, just take us through the Hall, because Howard Deneroff, longtime friend, gave my wife and I the first 15 or 20 minutes of the tour. And it blew me away on what you and Tom and Fran were able to assemble along with your own collections and all the help you had from others.
Well, thanks, JT. Appreciate you coming. Well, the Hall of Excellence, we've been, you know, it goes way back, really. But Tom and I have been working on this for 8 years with Fran. And, you know, we had the grand opening the other night, and it's up and running. I'm here right now over at the Fontainebleau Hotel. And Jeff Sulfur, who owns the hotel, has just been a great partner and built out these beautiful displays, and we got all this memorabilia, and there's really something for everyone. But it dates back all the way back. You know, I used to eat dinner regularly with Al Davis when he moved the team from Oakland to Los Angeles back in the early 80s. And we got together for a number of years just throughout the course of his life. And he had always wanted to build a Raiders Hall of Fame. And, you know, he had said commitment to excellence one night at dinner. I said, you know, Al, your name of your Hall of Fame should be the Hall of Excellence. And he said, Jimmy, that's a good idea. And he called me Jimmy. And I just kind of remembered that. And unfortunately, Al, throughout the course of his life, you know, was busy trying to win football games and Super Bowls and get stadiums and so forth. And he just never opened up his Hall of Excellence or his Hall of Fame. So when I spoke to Tom about it about 8 years ago, he broke some record. Tom owns all the records. And I said, what do you do with all of your stuff? And he had known that I had gotten all of this stuff over the course of time from, you know, all of these great athletes traveling with Ali and Tyson and so on and so forth. And so what do you do with it? What do you, he says, well, I just have it in my closet and I put it down in storage in a warehouse. I said, you know, we really ought to open up a museum and make it for all sports. Show all your stuff. Show all this stuff I have. Let's call it the Hall of Excellence. Tom said, great. So we took many twists and turns and we ended up here with this grand opening. And now we've got just everything in here, from Babe Ruth called shot bat to the bat that Jackie Robinson used to break the color barrier given to us by a big Raider fan, great great friend of mine and in the organization, Reggie Jackson from up in Oakland. And, you know, Kobe's first jersey, lots of Raider stuff, George Blanda's jersey when he got 2,000 points, Mark Davis's Aces rings from Las Vegas Aces and the trophy that they won when they repeated, you name it, it's in here. Dream Team jersey, all of Tom's jerseys. Then we have a trophy room, JT, that you saw. Yeah. What did you think?
I thought the trophy room was unbelievable. As a Yankee fan, to see the actual 98 trophy, one of the greatest teams ever assembled, and then to look at all the other trophies that were there side by side, from the Kentucky Derby to the Masters to everything you have there, Jim, it's so special, and it tells a story. And when we walked in initially and they gave us the headset, and I'm hearing Morgan Freeman, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about the party because you're doing deals left and right with Tommy and trying to get all this done. But how'd you get Morgan Freeman along with Oprah's Medal of Freedom and all that when you're asking for these people to help you with your long-term friendship with them? Morgan Freeman on the audio part of this is absolutely brilliant.
Well, when you have excellence, you've got to go to the best voice in the world. I call him the voice of God. And so I called up Fred Spector, who handles all of Morgan's affairs. Fred's 92 years old. Morgan's now 87 or 88. And I said to them, I said, you know what? We're doing this museum, and there's only one voice that should be in this museum for the overall tour. And he said yes. So we went down to Mobile, Alabama. He lives just outside of there. Spent the day at his recording studio, and it was just so great. He got in that chair and did 5 or 6 hours and didn't miss a beat and loved it. And he was just a total joy, and he's been a joy his whole life. He's just a gracious, courteous, wonderful guy. And so when you come to the Hall of Excellence, he gives you a 34-minute tour. And you will literally get goosebumps if you're, you know, a great sports fan, of him describing, you know, the trophy room and Tom's artifacts and, you know, Clint Eastwood's Academy Award for Unforgiven. Mm-hmm. You really just, you know, it's just unbelievable. But then if you want a specific artifact, and there's 310 of them in the museum, and you put your camera up to LeBron James's jersey when he broke the record, or the hoop, you then hear Marv Albert describing the artifact. Oh. So it's Marv for basketball. It's Bob Costas for baseball in the Olympics. It's Jim Nance for golf. It's Mary Carrillo for tennis. It's Andres Cantor for soccer. It's Mike Emmerich for hockey. It's Tom for his artifacts. It's me for boxing and Ali. And it's Oprah Winfrey for people who have changed the world and for entertainment. So there's something for everyone in here. We also have Elvis Presley's first, believe it or not, first suit that he wore when he became the original resident and the first resident to have a residency here in Las Vegas. He wore it at the press conference and wore it the first night. So Graceland gave us that, and the great folks at ABG and Angie Marchese. So there's 25 people right now. It's 110 degrees outside, JT. 110 degrees, and there's 25 people right now out on the strip dressed up as Elvis taking pictures with folks. So we have his original suit.
Jim Gray is our guest. You know, Jim, I'm here to help with the locals, and we have a national show with the Raiders, and we both are with SiriusXM, and you have such a massive voice here. The way I described it to my dad, who's 87, because he watched the Fox News piece with you and Trace Gallagher and Tom Brady, and I was explaining to my dad that the point that you make is to have fun and to change people's lives, and going through it, and I'm going to go through it a bunch, is to bring joy to people who are saying, wow, I'm in Vegas and I cannot see Tom Brady's collection in Miami or Boston or L.A. I got to go to the Fountain Blue in Vegas and I get all of Tom Brady's rings and his jerseys in one spot. I think that's a massive hook here because Tom is very private, as you know, with his memorabilia and his memorabilia deal, and he didn't sign his name all over the world. And to go into that back case, can you tell us about that case and how you came up with the style of it to house all those rings?
Well, the designers did a spectacular job, and you know, he's got seven rings in there from all of his Super Bowls, but there's actually eight rings of Tom's in the Hall of Excellence because we also have his Orange Bowl ring when he played for the University of Michigan. So that was his first ring, and if you look at what the first ring is to what it was with Tampa Bay when he won his last Super Bowl at age 43. You know, it's rings have come a long way, JT.
Yeah, no doubt.
In a country where bling matters, it's I don't know how many diamonds are in there. He describes it, but you know, look, you see things that you just aren't able to see. And the Fountain Blue, you come down here, we will valet park your car, and we will validate it. And you come in here to the Hall of Excellence, and it's just if you want to spend 20 minutes or 5 hours. You'll just have a tremendous experience, and Tom's rings are one of the centerpieces of it. And but there's something that, you know, look, it doesn't matter what sport you like, what aspect of entertainment you like. I believe, and I may be wrong, so I'll put a qualifier in here, JT. I believe we're the only place that has a display of the EGOT, which is the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. So Justin Timberlake has given us his first Grammy, Oprah Winfrey her first Emmy Award, Oprah Winfrey's Tony Award for The Color Purple, and Clint Eastwood for Unforgiven, his first Academy Award. So you can see that. And so, I mean, you know, look, if you love Serena, if you love women's athletic, you know, the one that is the greatest athlete right now, we have Simone Biles in the front and center case, right when you walk in, and everybody can see that as you walk the hallway here at the Fountain Blue. Her first leotard when she won the gold medal, her first gold medal in Rio. So, again, doesn't matter what you like. Soccer, we have the greatest soccer jerseys in the history from historic moments, from Maradona to Messi, to Beckenbauer, to Pele. They're all in there.
It's incredible. Jim Gray, as we wrap it up, let's give your wife credit. Tell us how Fran got involved with this, with you and Tom, and what her role has been. My wife loves meeting her the last couple of times at the gala, and obviously this is a passion project for her. Let's compliment her on what she brought to the table with the concept and fulfilling this.
Fran's been just terrific. First of all, she's tolerated all of this in the house for 37 years. And, you know, just like my mom, Jimmy, what are you doing collecting all this junk? Well, all this junk turned out to be pretty good, right?
Pretty good,
they never made me throw it away. But that was from the Living With Me experience as far as what she's contributed. Fran was the head of licensing and for the NBA when there were only 10 people in the office right after Larry O'Brien retired as commissioner and David Stern took over. So she ran all of the licensing for the Atlanta and marketing for the Atlanta Olympics with Billy Payne. And she spent a career, you know, marketing director for the Dodgers. So she understands sports inside and out. She understands what all of this memorabilia and historic artifacts are. And she has a keen eye, a brilliant mind. And so she's been a full partner in this. And, you know, obviously has had, you know, tremendous input and, you know, and she comes with credentials. And so she obviously has all the respect in the world from the partnership at the Fountain Blue with Jeffrey Sofer and all the great folks over there. And, you know, as my wife with Tom. So she brought a lot to this and she has the right equilibrium. You know, when you ask people for their most prized possessions, JT, okay, we're asking Pete Sampras and Billie Jean King, and you go up and down, Charles Woodson, we're taking from them their most prized possessions, Jack Nicklaus's Masters Trophy, and we're saying, trust us, we're going to not only present you right, but keep it safe, keep it protected behind the bulletproof glass, present it so that we can inspire, educate, and entertain. You know, Fran plays a great role in that because everybody likes Fran.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, has tremendous respect for Tom. And when you say Tom Brady's a part of it, it opens every door, JT. Every door.
It did. So, we could talk about this for hours. Jim, thanks for including me and my wife. And next time we'll talk about the poodle room and other issues. I mean, when I was up at that party, you gave the mic and introduced Tom. And I'm sitting there talking to Mr. Brady, who might be one of the greatest gentlemen I've ever met. And I don't say that lightly. The Brady family was there as Tom spoke. And Mark Davis is there. And you have members of all different walks of sports. That was one of the coolest rooms I've ever been in. They took our phones from us. We couldn't have our phones.
There? I mean, how about the legends in there? I mean, it was great to have the Brady family, and you can see why Tom's so great.
Yeah.
If you don't like Tom Brady, better look at yourself. I mean, I know he's beaten the heck out of 30 cities.
Yes.
So only two really love him, Tampa and of course, New England, and now, of course, the Raiders. But if you can see, because of Galen and Tom Sr., he calls himself the original Tom Brady, which is a great line. If you can see why Tom is so good, but to be in there with Eric Heiden and Reggie Jackson and Bill Belichick and all the people who showed up for this, you know, it was just it was a great night and great for the Hall of Excellence and the Poodle Room at the Fountain Blue. They did a great job, and so we're all lucky. We're blessed. And,
yep.
JT, you have a big voice in this town, and you're a great broadcaster, and it was an honor to have you, and we thank you for showing up, and your wife, and, you know, you're always welcome, and we just appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great day. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
All right, JT. Take care. Thank you.
Jim Gray. Greatly appreciate Jim. As you can tell, he's a great storyteller, and I didn't want to get too personal on this, but his private collection that he had needed to be out there in public for people to see. When I looked at Brady's seven rings in this majestic case, how about that if you're Sully from Southie? I'm going to be in Boston next week for a few days. How would you like to be a Boston Patriot, a New England Patriot, and you want to go see Tom Brady's rings and you can't, you got to go to Vegas? Let that sink in. Tom Brady could have put his ring collection, his jersey, his draft card of 199 anywhere. Miami, where he spends a lot of time. He chose Las Vegas because of Jim and Fran Gray. And it's really nice that he did that. And then Jim, to get on the phone and call Clint Eastwood and Oprah and to get Justin Timberlake's Grammy and then to work with Memphis and to go there and talk, and Fran to be able to get Elvis's suit that he wore in Vegas there. I mean, this is incredible from Graceland. So head on out there, and I think you will, because it's worth it. If you don't go see this, I'd be disappointed, because this is something, if you live in Vegas and you're a local, I think you better understand what this thing's about, because you'll send more people there. And Jim Gray and Tom Brady will really appreciate that. We'll wrap it up on the other side, and we'll preview maybe a hint of some of the players that we're going to preview next week as we continue our project at looking back at the most unique, greatest Raider draft picks of all time, with the greatest value and the impact they had on the organization. Friday, right here, brought to you by M Resort Spahn Casino, where M is now building that second tower. That's going up fast. Man, in Vegas, we build things quickly. That M Tower looks unbelievable. I was at the Raiders Tavern and Grill yesterday. Nice crowd there. Some new memorabilia going in there, wink, wink, if you're going to the Raiders Tavern and Grill. And our whole team there thanks them for their partnership as we continue Friday, wrapping it up on Raider Nation Radio. All right, wrapping it up on Raider Nation Radio from home today, Bucket of Modelo's Friday. Thanks to Modelo, as we like to on Friday, as we always do, thank our proud partners. Q's coming up next. Big shows all next week, a couple of big shows. Then I'm heading out for the 4th of July, and I'll be back after that. We'll be back ready for Raiders training camp, which is going to jump on us pretty quickly. Want to thank Astrum for these great headsets. We thank them for their partnership. If you want to get new headsets that the DJs wear, and the radio and podcast guys, astromtech.com, put in JT. The Black Hole, they're kicking off an unbelievable promotion today. Just go to theblackhole.com, download the app, do everything that you can with the Raiders. Now you have an unbelievable opportunity, and breaking news, an unbelievable opportunity to listen to this show on the Black Hole app, which is a really nice bonus for us because the Black Hole has listeners all over the world. Boyd Gaming and all their local promotions, 10 properties here in the Valley. We love everything about this new mezcal that we have, Banaa, B-N-A-A-A. Ask for it. If you love mezcal, wherever you go, ask for Banaa now. It's hit the market, and they're a proud partner with us. Alex DeCastaverde, who I met with this week, and he told me right to my face, he hopes you don't have to call him, but if you do and you get into an accident, he'll help you out. Personal injury plus all the other law that they do at the DeCastaverde Law Group. We appreciate them. Brothers Win, brotherswin.com, PTs, and everyone at Golden Entertainment. La Casa Cigars and Lounge. I think I'm going to be there at some point over the weekend as Mike's about to reopen. The grand reopening for La Casa Cigars at Tivoli Village with live entertainment. Perfect timing, Mike. We need to get out there for some live music and some sticks. Can't wait. M Resort, where I was yesterday, the Spahn Casino, building the second tower. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One Love, proud partner of our show. Are you a Caniac? Are you getting Cane's? You know, they make the sauce in the store every day. It's fresh. I have some right there in the refrigerator. Tito's Handmade Vodka. My go-to vodka is Tito's. Go have yourself a Tito's here over the weekend. I think I got everybody. It's nice when you have this many proud partners. And oh, Tommy White and the 872 Laborers. And I'm going to throw in a plug for Virgin, who renewed with us. And Virgin starts up in August. Virgin Hotel, their pool is great right now. If you're looking for a staycation, head on over to Virgin. And I know you're going to love that. So that's it. Hope you enjoyed everything we did today. Thanks, Bob, to Bobby, who put the show together. I'm jumping in the pool. I'm having a Modelo. And I'm enjoying the summer. Thanks for listening to Raider Nation Radio, everybody. Beaver, Las Raiders. Beaver, all right, wrapping it up on Raider Nation Radio.